Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, January 11th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everyone. It is a balmy 43 degrees and very sunny here in upstate New York. Lots of icy crispies on the ground. And I think it's supposed to go up to 50 today. So that means all the ice and snow will be gone once again. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Mad Science, DARPA's Biological Technology Office, and Designing Life. We had read an interview with the guy who took over the BTO back in 2014, I believe. And asked him all about the different programs and what makes him excited. And some of the things that they are working on. The title of that story was DARPA's biotech chief says 2017 will, quote, blow our minds. And we covered that because just about everything we talk about on the show is mind-blowing technology that is about to roll out and end up in the mainstream. We found out DARPA's got all kinds of great things going on, like that shape-shifting RNA, DNA, immune system, stuff that we had talked about. They also are highly involved in the Brain Project. They mentioned that as well, trying to treat veterans for PTSD and all these other brain anomalies. Remember Nana's Alzheimer's, and we found out ways to insert and remove memories because, you know, post-trauma. Want to get rid of those. There are a couple other things that he was talking about as well. We really didn't get into these on this show. The biosynchrosity, where they are trying to reset or control the bodily clock. And I've posted a few stories about that. They've looked at the circadian rhythm, and especially how cell phones and the blue light from your cell phones really messes up your circadian cycle. Should never, ever, ever, and I know how hard this is, but never, ever, look at your cell phone at least a half hour before bed because it sends you, your body, into a tizzy. But hey, who listens to good advice? So today, I don't know, I had all this brain stuff I wanted to get done, but there were a lot of interesting stories that popped out yesterday along this vein of the shape-shifting immune system. You know, we had talked about that vaccine. There was a story out of the New York Times way back when, and we're going to see if we can find it, because that was the first time that I had really ever seen anything about their new technology in the mainstream. Hold on 1 second. We had talked about Project BioShield, which was something set up by George Bush, all in the name of keeping us safe. They had a strategic national stockpile of vaccinations and medications for all the biggies, anything that was considered to be a weapon of mass destruction. But Bush was allowing all these newfangled, untested, because remember back in those days, it still was unethical to test things on humans. Don't worry about that now. Get rid of that pesky FDA with the 21st Century Cures Act. But back in those days, it was very unethical. And if there was more harm than good that could potentially come out of a test, it was not tried on humans. Only in the most desperate cases, if we had an emergency, would it give them the rights to do testing on humans. That's why an Ebola outbreak was a big deal with the new RNA DNA therapy that they had come up with. And they had used some sort of serum that they created out of the one doctor who had been infected. I don't know if it was T cells or his white blood cells, but they had taken some of his immunity and then made it reproduce and then injected it into other people. And they said that it seemed to be successful till later when they started finding the Ebola and testicles and eyeballs, but don't worry about that. But it was the first time, and at least from what I've paid attention to, that I remember, even on a global level, so they mixed all this stuff up, totally 100% experimental. They had put all this funding, federal funding, into turning up the heat on finding a cure for Ebola and all these other infectious diseases, and so is Mad Science Got Mad in the background. Designing and developing, and then we took troops down to Africa to go get control of that Ebola with this new untested vaccine, never before tested on humans. And we're going to start injecting it into people. Well, part of what that strategic stockpile was all about was for when we have the next quote-unquote pandemic or bioterror, they would be able to ship it out of the strategic stockpile. And I'm trying to remember, we were told, I took that FEMA course, that there were 6 or 7 strategic stockpiles all across the country, and I would assume it probably would be by FEMA region. And when there is emergency like that declared, you know, all the appropriate officials gather around that FEMA stockpile, and they start breaking it down. They start cracking everything out, and there's everything and anything in that stockpile. It's not just like there's not one stockpile for Ebola and one for swine flu or whatever. When you crack a stockpile, you crack a stockpile. It's got everything. So they would have to crack that stockpile and then get supplies broken down and distributed to each main area. And I don't, honestly, I did, just so you guys know, when I was cleaning at Christmas time, I found all the books from that FEMA class that gave all the breakouts, gave all the positions for one of those, what do they call it, emergency pods. There's all the job positions with the job description. There's standard operating procedures for everything. It's an entire huge manila envelope with every single position broken out and what they are and what the job descriptions are. That might be kind of fun to look at one of these days. But anyway, so these strategic stockpiles were to be loaded with experimental vaccines. And here, we're going to go. I had read about this years ago, and I knew about this because of the FEMA class I took in 2006, where they had first talked about creating the universal flu vaccine, which was part of the Blue Angel program, which was utilizing alternatives to eggs to create vaccines because, hey, eggs take way too long. In this case, if you remember, they were using tobacco, genetically modified tobacco, to create antigens in a Texas A&M lab somewhere. DARPA was involved. Then they spun it out. I don't remember. It was a company in Kentucky, I think, is the one that they ended up working with. But it all started at Texas A&M with DARPA funding. Anyway, Homeland Security stockpiling billions of dollars of experimental vaccines. Now, the story, the date must be the date on the website, January 11, 2017, because this most certainly is not a story from today. But I had read all about this as a part of my training in 2006. And this was going on since after 9/11, when, of course, we had the anthrax attacks. Do you guys remember? Right on the heels of 9/11, there were anthrax attacks. Found out it was actually our anthrax. And it was somebody within our government been doing it. But in the meantime, they were sending out anthrax. And we started to get scared of bioterror. So that's when we started making little biosensors to put all over New York City. Remote diagnostics. But it's also when we started putting experimental vaccines into the strategic stockpile. So let's read about this. Project BioShield allows the U.S. government to stockpile billions of dollars worth of experimental vaccines that have never, ever been approved by the FDA to be used on American citizens. But they can when the government declares a state of emergency. Ding, ding, da, 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 ding. See, this used to be their ace in the hole. This used to be, you know, when we had an emergency. Oh, my God, it's swine flu. Oh, my God, it's bird flu. Got to open up the strategic stockpile because we don't have enough vaccines. Get all you lined up. And then nobody lined up. See, they tried it a couple times, and it didn't quite work. So that's why they got to go bigger, better this next time. And they better have something It doesn't take up so much room. Like a universal vaccine of some kind. They could just flip little switches and turn things on and off. Well, let's find out what the old plan used to be, because it wasn't that nice to begin with. And now we're going to look at the new plan. The U.S. government has guaranteed a thriving U.S. vaccine market for pharmaceutical companies by purchasing billions of dollars worth of vaccines every year with U.S. taxpayer dollars. Ding, ding. As we have previously reported here on Health Impact News, the CDC is the largest purchaser of vaccines in the United States, spending over $4 billion annually to purchase vaccines that are approved by the FDA. Well, don't worry about it. That 21st Century Cures Act got that pesky FDA right out of the way. So we don't need FDA approval anymore. If it might cure somebody. See how this is working? See, they already had the back door in place. So we thought we were safe, but we really weren't. We thought human experimentation was not allowed, but it really was. It just was done all in the name of an emergency. Well, no need to worry about that anymore, because now it's right out in the open with 21st Century Cures, all balls out. We are going to cure you of your cancer with legions of nanobots and shape-shifting immune system vaccines. Since the CDC is the government agency responsible for seeing vaccine safety, this creates a huge conflict of interest, allowing vaccines to be approved without FDA approval. The U.S. government guarantees a market for vaccines produced by pharmaceutical companies by legally protecting them from lawsuits in civil court. And we talked about that. That VAERS database, vaccine adverse reaction database that all reactions are supposed to be recorded into, but probably are not. It's up to the doctor to record the adverse reaction, and if it's reported and they don't, well, I don't think anybody comes after them for it. But if you are ever vaccine injured and are expecting some sort of compensation, what's a human life worth? Well, guess what? You're going to have to go in front of a vaccine court, and you're going to have to prove beyond a shadow of any doubt, and we are talking about major skeptics here, that this vaccine was the only cause for your child's death or maiming or Nana's major loss of critical functions. It's not going to be very easy. There aren't very many people who win. Who wants to have to go argue what a life is worth, and now your loved one is no longer your loved one? They've been injured by multinational, global, multi-billion dollar corporations that are in cahoots with the federal government, that are doing experimental things that have never been approved or tested. But hey, guinea pig, it was all in the name of rolling those dice. So he said that there was an emergency. Treating you with our experimental vaccines, maybe having 1 in 20, is better than having everybody die now, isn't it? By getting infected. I mean, guys, this is crazy. And the fact of the matter is, when it comes to an emergency, guess what? You no longer have the ability to say no. They become mandatory. They declare things such as martial law. They will be going door to door. They will be delivering things to your mailbox. They will be requiring you to come to the high school. Now, honestly, they never talked about going door to door and forcing people. But I can tell you that I have read documents such as that CCI manual, a civilian CIC, maybe civilian internee manual. I don't know if you guys remember that. What was the name of that website? Something Intelligence. They have all the FOIA requests that they publish. Oh, I'll have to remember. I'll put it in the notes. I don't remember right now. But they have all the FOIA requests. They have all these great documents that they've dug up and gotten copies of, had the Fed send them. And one of them was the civilian internee manual. And that was, of course, in the case of national unrest, where, you know, we can't live on our own because we might die. We don't know how to take care of ourselves. Oh, please help us. Please help us. So go into the FEMA camp. And they're going to determine who is vaccinated and who is not, because you remember all those unvaccinated people are a danger to society. Believe it or not, I saw a brand new story yesterday that actually brought up Little Johnny and Disney World and measles. And they are starting this mantra again, if you can even believe it. But you know it. You know it. We got this new technology coming now, and the DARPA, the head of the DARPA Biological Technologies Office, said it yesterday. They got this. They're chomping at the bit. Well, people aren't going to step up for this. They're dubbing it as a gene therapy. The only way people are going to step up for this, if there is a clear and present danger to them and their families, right in their faces, bleeding out orifices, making people cower in fear, that's what's going to happen. And I hate to say it, but I've said it before. You know, things, weirder things have happened when they got something and it's this big. And especially when we got bazillions of dollars riding on this. All these new sprinkle-funded DARPA startups that want to start spinning out IPOs. We got 30 years to make $1 billion on the stock market. Let's get it moving. You know, I'm going to predict that the time is ripe, 2017, for at least sporadic pandemics to start popping up here and there so they can start using their new toy. Because I wouldn't doubt it. I'm telling you, we've been watching this for a very, very long time. And I mean, 2017, if I first heard about this in 2006, we are talking 10 straight years I've been watching this. This is coming, and they are ready. And the DARPA big boy is talking about it now, and they're ready to rock and roll. But anyway, back to this. Project BioShield, like I said, this has been going on since after 2001, these experimental vaccines. So we've taken another step forward. This was horrifying enough. Now we have taken it to the point where there are no ethics. We don't have to worry about it. We can experiment on people because now there's laws on that. We don't need FDA approval. It says, however, this is another U.S. government agency purchasing billions of dollars worth of vaccines, and this would be your CDC and your FDA and the strategic stockpile. The Department of Homeland Security, created shortly after the terrorist attacks of September 2001, was also authorized by Congress to purchase and stockpile billions of dollars of experimental vaccines that were not approved by the FDA to use on the American citizens during the time of a national emergency as defined by the U.S. government. Project BioShield was enacted by Congress in 2004, so there you go, signed into law by President G.W. Bush, and it appropriated $5.6 billion to the Department of Homeland Security for, quote, the purchase of next-generation countermeasures against anthrax, ding, 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 and smallpox, as well as other agents. The last published Project BioShield annual report was for 2013, and a congressional report was prepared as of 2014. The congressional report prepared by the Congressional Research Service reveals some very troubling facts about Project BioShield that the general public may not be aware of in regards to taxpayer-funded vaccine development. Ding, 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 ding. The continuation, by the way, of our biowarfare program that never officially ended. Well, it did officially end. It never unofficially ended down the deep, dark hallways with bloody doors. But it outlines some things the general public may not be aware of in regards to taxpayer-funded vaccine development and purchases and the use of such experimental vaccines. First of all, it guarantees a market for experimental drugs and vaccines where one does not currently exist. And hey, guess what? Now let's fast forward a few years. We have made that guarantee permanent with the 21st Century Cures Act. It is all balls out. It is experimental medicine 101 in all of our hospitals. FDA out of the way, fast track approval, rubber stamping, everyone get invested. because it is going to be a multi-billion-dollar market by 2020. It's got to make you feel good. It's got to make you want to ink that piece of paper to become part of the Precision Medicine Initiative, to become one of the All of Us program cohorts and give up your DNA so they can cure you at some point in the future with their experimental vaccines and technologies. Following the terrorist attacks of 2001, both the administration and Congress determined that the federal government needed new medical countermeasures such as diagnostic testing. DARPA's been working on that as well. Drugs, ding, they have a new on-site drug manufacturing little factory. Vaccines, ding, they've been working on that as well. And other treatments like nanobots in your blood to respond to an attack using chemical, biological, radiological, or nuclear agents. Representatives of the pharmaceutical industry attributed the paucity of these agent countermeasures to the lack of a significant commercial market. And isn't that their excuse the whole time? It's like, well, there's no money in curing malaria. Even though lots of people die from it, it's all poor people. So there's no money in curing malaria. So we're not going to even work on a cure for that. We're going to work on things that we can get high dollar value for and make a profit. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous that they even let them do that. I mean, there should be a market. I don't know. Maybe they have poor vaccines. I don't know what to even say. I mean, this is kind of such a slippery slope, but any vaccine really scares the shit out of me since there are so many natural remedies out there. But, of course, we have CRISPR that has been designated as a WMD by Clapper now. So it's anything goes world. I don't think anything traditional is going to help us in the future. Anyway, they argued that because these diseases and conditions occur infrequently, the private sector perceived little economic incentive to invest hundreds of millions of dollars required to bring new treatments to market. And remember, that's the argument that they had as to why we had to get rid of the FDA, because it was so damn expensive to create a product and to get approval and to show that it was safe. Damn it. So we can't make life-saving cures unless we get rid of that safety net. There wasn't really much of a safety net to begin with. Get rid of human before human tests. Let's just go straight to humans. In 2004, Congress passed the Project BioShield Act to encourage the development of chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear agent countermeasures. And they also appropriated $5.6 billion to acquire these countermeasures through Project BioShield. So basically what they did was said, hey, we got $5.6 billion here dangling. Why don't you guys start working on some experimental stuff that could cure us if we get hit with some sort of bioterror attack? And we'll buy it from you. It doesn't matter if we use it or not. We're going to put it in the stockpile. It could be as experimental as possible. And then, hey, guess what? If we just so happen to get attacked, wink, we can crack out your new experimental vaccines and try it on the whole population of America. How cool would that be? And that's what they did. So thank goodness. Thank goodness. Bird flu and swine flu. I remember which flu it was. I don't remember if it was bird or swine, but one of them, probably 2011, you remember one of them had like bird and pig and dog flus all mixed in there. And they were like, wow, we've never seen this happen before in nature. How weird is that? It's got like all these strains all mixed together, cross species. I still remember that because I followed it very carefully because I knew all about this Project BioShield. And I was like, what are the chances? Bird, cow, flu, bird, cow, dog, pig flu, just floating around out there. It sure sounded to me like somebody in a lab was experimenting with something and then accidentally on purpose let it go. And then it wasn't as virulent as they had expected. Whoops. Anyway, I don't know, just a postulation, but I lived through that moment. And I got to tell you, it was beyond fishy. Using the authority of the Department of Homeland Security, the U.S. government can now create a lucrative vaccine market for unapproved experimental vaccines using taxpayer funding with no conditions of market demand, no competition to keep the prices lower, no safety requirements, and no legal risk for faulty products. Well, guess what, guys? That was then. This is now. We still got that, but it's even worse now because we have neurological surveillance. We have the mental health provisions. We have every mad science gone mad. We have nanobots in your blood now. This is just a continuation of Project BioShield, except it is made a law, and it is now not just in one of seven shrink-wrapped large blobs of experimental medication hidden somewhere across the country. Oh, no, it's in every hospital across America now. See, they've taken this from the deep, dark corners, and now they've pushed it out into our healthcare system. That's what happened for 2017. They instantaneously created another multi-billion dollar vaccine market to supplement the already existing billion-dollar vaccine market for approved vaccines. And Project BioShield contracts can have multiple benefits to potential countermeasure agents. The contracts can reduce market risk by defining the minimum economic value of a product. They can also mitigate development risk and provide some revenue during product development. Blah, blah, blah. Under Project BioShield, Homeland Security may purchase unapproved and unlicensed countermeasures. And like I said, that's all changed on the 21st Century Cures Act. It makes it a fast track. If it looks like there may be benefits. I don't know. Did we keep going? Let's go to 2015. I don't want to go back to 2005 and read about all that. Though we have 2005, the military used the unapproved anthrax vaccine. And that was the one with the squalene. And I think they even did it back in 91 or 92 because a lot of my friends got that when they were in the Gulf War and it messed them all up. There are also flu drugs that were unapproved, but they were authorized by Project BioShield, and that was in 2009. H1N1, FDA used its European authority, and I remember when this happened as well because we covered this. This is when they let the squalene into the United States because they said, oh my God, we do not have enough flu vaccine here in the United States, where we really did, but they had already stopped testing people to see if they really had swine flu or bird flu. They were just saying, get the flu shot, and then they said, oh my God, we don't have enough, so let's open the floodgates to the European vaccine. Let's let that in there, all in the name of the declared national emergency. But guess what? The European vaccine had an unapproved content that hadn't been used in the United States. And it had been questioned as to its safety. And there was the squalene as an adjuvant. There had already been issues with the squalene adjuvant in the anthrax vaccine that they had used in the military. But hey, who's thinking about that now? We got people flopping all over with bird flu. That bird flu that was undiagnosed. You got a cough, you got bird flu, get a shot. But the FDA used its European authority extensively in 2009, 2010 to facilitate the nation's response to the 2009 H1N1 influenza pandemic, including issuing three EUAs to enable the use of antiviral medication for the treatment or the prophylaxis of influenza. Another one to enable the use of an N95 respirator to help reduce wear exposure to pathologic biologic airborne particulates. By the way, if you don't have them, next time you go out, and even if you go to like one of those discount stores, not dollar store, but like if you go to Ollie's or something like that, Overstock, or Mr. Seconds, they probably have them. N95 masks, get them in a 10 or a 20 pack. I highly recommend, and I know you might sound like a lunatic, but I don't think so, honestly, because you can always find a use for them, even if it's just sanding a wall or putting in insulation. But N95 masks, I keep a 20 pack in my trunk. And I didn't start that on purpose, but I found them one time and they were a decent price. I don't know. I found 20 for maybe $15 or something. That was a good price because they're usually a couple bucks a piece. But I bought them and I put them in my trunk when I was coming home from the store. And then I never took them out because, you know, I travel, I go see my family. We have Nana and Grandpa, and whatever. You know, I have a kid. So we're around doing things. And I thought to myself, like, how dumb would that be if I bought these nice N95s and something really happens and they're stuck in my little snap container, you know, under the bed? It's not going to help me much. So I thought to myself, you know, probably a good idea. No matter where you are, hey, you end up in some sort of situation and you're on the road, an N95 mask might be the thing that saves you. So I would highly recommend N95, or they even have N100s. Those are probably much more expensive, but they should both protect you, at least in the beginning, from some sort of biological threat. If you start seeing people drop dead for no reason whatsoever, get out those N95s and put one on nice and tight. I don't know, just saying. But if you want to do a little something for a few bucks that could potentially keep you and your family safe in the future, I would say N95 is a pretty good investment. Anyway, enable the use of N95 respirators, blah, 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 and to enable the use of in vitro diagnostic tests for the H1N1 influenza virus infection. And, you know, now they have all these field tests. They could do one drop of blood and diagnose 100 different diseases in the field. That was something that they've been working on since then. And that's just over the last year or so they have come out with that. So now let's finish this because I see something about vaccine objectors. Those would be people like you and me who are resistant consumers. As we have shown, the U.S. government has guaranteed pharmaceutical companies a market for both their approved and unapproved experimental vaccines and is worth $1 billion. Generated by the U.S. government, who purchases most of these vaccines with U.S. taxpayer funds. And I mean, it's still happening. We're just now sprinkle funding the front end of development. All those pharmaceutical companies are getting some sort of kickback from the feds to start development, utilizing taxpayer dollars to then create a multi-billion dollar spin-out company. It's disgusting. They are using us on the back end and then on the front end because, you know, fast track it through the FDA. And now we get to try it on people and make the people our guinea pig. The pharmaceutical companies bear no risk whatsoever as they cannot be sued in civil court for faulty products that cause injury or death. And that was that Verse court that we talked about. How could there be a better market with such guaranteed results? What could possibly stand in the way of such a powerful market? Well, vaccine objectors would be it. Current U.S. population is the most heavily vaccinated population in the world. But apparently, the pharmaceutical lobbyists and the U.S. governments are not satisfied, and all across the United States, at both the local and the federal level, politicians proposed all kinds of new legislation to remove vaccine exemptions and pursue mandatory vaccines. And that was all of last year. And the year before, they had worked on that. And remember, they demonized little Johnny in Disney World because Johnny ruined, I don't know how many people it was, 18 other vacations because they got measles. And who even knows if Johnny was responsible, because they never proved to me Johnny had the wild version. But kids who get the vaccine get the cultured version at times and can spread it. And they never proved what strain had spread. So we don't know if it was Johnny or if it was some vaccinated kid who was just shedding the illness. But no worries. Don't worry. Don't worry. It created a narrative and it got, Mama Bear against Mama Bear, attacking each other by the throat over whose little baby is more protected, the ones who get the poison shot into their bloodstream or the ones who don't and utilize nature to build their immune system. So, I don't know. We don't need to read about this whole anti-vaxxer thing because we've already been through this. The story is a year old or two. But now let's fast forward to shape-shifting immune systems. Let's move a year ahead of time We have the New York Times reporting protection without a vaccine. A team of scientists announced what could prove to be an enormous step forward in the fight against what? Oh, HIV as well. They're going after all of them. Remember, they can go do their Petri dish tests in Africa on HIV, as well as Ebola. Scientists at the Scripps Research Institute said they have developed an artificial antibody that, once in the blood, grabbed hold of the virus and it inactivated it. And this molecule can actually eliminate HIV from infected monkeys and protect them from future infections. But this treatment is not a vaccine. Not in the ordinary sense. Oh, no, no, no. By delivering synthetic genes into the muscles of the monkeys, the scientists are essentially re-engineering these animals to resist disease. Ding, 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 ding. This is this new therapy that the head of the Biological Technologies Office at DARPA was talking about in the story that we read yesterday. Researchers are testing this novel approach, not just against HIV, but also Ebola, malaria, influenza, and hepatitis. So far, the sky is the limit, says Michael Farzan, an immunologist at Scripps and the lead author of this new study. Dr. Farzan and other scientists are increasingly hopeful that this new technique may be able to provide long-term protection against diseases for which vaccines have failed. Don't worry that it's experimental, wink. 21st Century Cures Act is now in play, and we can do all this stuff without anybody complaining or even batting an eye. Step right up, people. The first human trial based on this strategy, called immunoprophylaxis by gene transfer, or IGT for short, is underway, and several new ones are planned. It could revolutionize the way we immunize against public health threats in the future, says Dr. Gary J. Nabel, chief scientific officer of Sanofi, a pharmaceutical company that produces a wide range of vaccines. And yes, Sanofi from France. Don't trust the French companies. Sanofi is also the one who won the contract to come up with the Zika vaccine for Brazil. And Sanofi, I was just reading recently, is one of the spin-off companies from IG Farben, back from the days of the Nazis. Yes, Sanofi. We had Bayer and Sanofi, and there was a third one. So whether or not this immunoprophylaxis by gene transfer, more affectionately known as IGT, will succeed is still an open question, and researchers still need to gauge its safety and effectiveness in humans. Fast track it. But the prospect of genetically engineering people to resist infectious disease may raise some concern among patients. But you know what? We're going to sell it to you as Precision Medicine Initiative. And we're going to put it on billboards out in the woods. Say, oh, it's here, Precision Medicine. Come get your cancer cured. Cure your HIV or your hepatitis. Come on, we're going to flip some switches on your genes and you will be all better. The reality is that we are touching a third rail, so it is going to take some explanation, says Dr. David Baltimore, a Nobel Prize recipient and a virologist at Caltech, who is testing IGT against a number of diseases. Conventional vaccines prompt the immune system to learn how to make antibodies by introducing it to weakened or dead pathogens, right? That's how immunology has worked our entire lives, or even just their molecular fragments. But our puny human immune systems produce a wide range of antibodies, some of which can fight these infections, some that cannot. In some cases, these antibodies provide strong defenses and vaccines against things such as smallpox and measles. Can it sometimes lead to complete protection? But sometimes not, because you could still get them. I got measles back in 92, maybe 91. There was a big outbreak we found out in our research, because I remember I got it in college, but there was a big outbreak we found in our research that had come up all through this area in Pennsylvania. Apparently the vaccines that we got in the 70s didn't work as well as they should have, or we ran out. But anyway, IGT is altogether different from all traditional vaccinations. Instead, it is a form of gene therapy. Scientists isolate the genes that produce powerful antibodies against certain diseases, and then they synthesize, oh yes, ding ding, artificial versions of those antibodies. And then these genes are placed into viruses. Remember, we looked at this months and months ago, the way they did this. These virus-like particles, they suck the guts out because viruses are the ultimate Trojan horse and getting into cells within the body. So they suck the guts out of these viruses and they put their own payload in. And then they get them into the people. I think they actually explain this here. The genes are placed into viruses, and then they are injected into human tissue, usually the muscle. The viruses invade the human cells with their new synthetic DNA payloads. And the synthetic genes are then incorporated into the recipient's own DNA. Ding, 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 ding. And if all goes well, you don't bump into walls. You don't grow arms out of the back of your head. And the new genes will instruct the cells to begin manufacturing these new, powerful antibodies. The idea for IgT emerged during a fight against HIV, and in a few people, it turned out some antibodies against HIV turned out to be extremely potent. But the so-called broadly neutralizing antibodies can latch on to many different strains of the virus and keep them from infecting new cells. So Dr. Philip R. Johnson, Chief Scientific Officer of the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia and a virologist at the University of Pennsylvania, hey, right where they're working on that CRISPRing T-cell technology for cancer, had an idea. Why not try giving broadly neutralizing antibodies to everybody? Hey, what a great idea that is. And at the time, Dr. Johnson and other researchers were experimenting with gene therapy disorders for things such as hemophilia. And the researchers had figured out how to load genes into viruses and persuade them to invade cells. Yes, 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 little Trojan horses. But this isn't part of the covert biowarfare program. No, it's all about keeping you safe. And it occurred to Dr. Johnson that he might just be able to use a strategy to introduce the genes for a powerful antibody into a patient's cells. And after all the cells began producing antibodies, the patient, in effect, would be, quote-unquote, vaccinated against a disease. And this idea represented a new radical approach for gene therapy. Till now, they had just focused on curing one genetic disorder, not fixing the body to apply to anything. So, let's see how far we go here. There's no guarantee it would succeed, blah, blah, blah. In 2009, Johnson and his colleagues announced an approach that worked after all. In their experiment, they sought to protect monkeys from SIV, which is the primate version of HIV, and to do so, they used the virus to deliver powerful genes to the monkeys' muscles. The muscle cells produced the antibodies, as they had hoped. Then they infected the monkey. Oh, yes, that poor little monkey got infected. And the monkey produced enough antibodies in their muscles to protect them from the infection. Without the IgT procedure, monkeys dosed with that virus would have died. Now, what's interesting about that statement is I had postulated a few things yesterday and the last time we talked about this gene therapy shape-shifting immune system is that there's going to come a point in the future where us resistant consumers who don't want to get this therapy, who don't want to become a part of the 21st century medicine experiment, are going to be deemed as post-human. We are going to be deemed a danger. We are going to be demonized. Just like they tried to do when Johnny ruined everybody's Disney vacation. And they're going to try to put our feet to the fire. They're going to say you can't get health insurance or any type of medical care at all if you're not up to date. It's like if your pet doesn't have its rabies shot and you try to take your pet to the vet, and they're going to want to give your pet all those vaccinations before they can even put him into the veterinary clinic. Because, you know, he could potentially have something that could potentially infect the other animals, even though by giving him a shot doesn't cure anything if they're already infected. Unless, of course, it's IgT. But hey, back in those days, it wasn't. But they're going to make us step right up and get this new therapy that'll protect us from anything. But hey, you know, eventually, it's still going to come down to where there are lots of us that aren't going to step up, aren't going to put our children in the front of the line to get one of these gene therapy injections. And so the next way they're going to do it is, oh, just like they did with this little monkey, they're going to let an infection go. They're going to let something that we don't have any natural protection against go, maybe even in just little sporadic ways. Maybe they won't completely blanket the country, but I have a really bad feeling. Just like we had that bird, swine, cow, dog flu that appeared one day, and they're like, oh my God, never seen this before, never before seen in nature, and we don't have any natural protections against it. I have a feeling that there is going to be a point in our future where there is some horrible pathogen out there that unless we have this newfangled technology in our bloodstream, we also will not be able to protect ourselves against it. And like that poor little monkey, without that IgT procedure, we will have died. So, like I said yesterday, 180 miles an hour toward a cliff, foot down on the pedal. Either you're going to get the shot or you're not. And if you don't, well, curtains for you, Johnny. Dr. Johnson's study, yeah, with this poor little monkey willing to have died if he didn't get this procedure. They persuaded Dr. Farzan that IgT had great promise. He says, I started drinking the Kool-Aid. You got to love that. Yes, the Kool-Aid. Just like down in, I don't even remember. What was the name of the city? Oh, I don't even remember his name. Jimmy Jones. Drink the Kool-Aid, he says. And Dr. Farzan and his colleagues have been modifying HIV antibodies to develop more potent defenses against the virus. Meanwhile, in 2011, Dr. Baltimore and his colleagues showed that antibodies delivered into cells with viruses could then also protect mice, suggesting that if humans got IgT, it could protect them against HIV-contaminated needles. Oh, we are going around the immune system, he says, rather than trying to stimulate the immune system like in the old days. So what we're doing is pretty fundamentally different from vaccination, although the end result is pretty similar. Wink. Gary W. Kettner, a microbiologist at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, you got to love anything that comes out of there, was intrigued by Dr. Baltimore's results and wondered if IgT could be marshaled against another major disease that eluded vaccines. Oh, Billy Gates' favorite, malaria. Dr. Kettner, Dr. Baltimore, and their colleagues found a potent antibody against malaria and used, again, another virus we sucked the guts out and then put synthetic material into to deliver the gene. We're making it in mice. And they reported that when malaria-laden mosquitoes were biting the mice, up to 80% of those animals were protected. So it is encouraging. These experiments suggest that antibodies created by IgT could help protect against disease that vaccines have resisted for decades. Other studies suggest that IgT may also help against sudden outbreaks in the future. You know, like those ones that just appear never before seen, all kinds of mixed up, and just start dropping people like flies. Yeah, those ones, like the ones we used to have in the strategic stockpile that were not tested on humans. Yeah, those ones that now are going to go full force because we've gotten that pesky FDA out of the way with the 21st Century Cures Act. Ah, see the connection now? A pathologist at the University of Pennsylvania and his colleagues have been investigating using gene therapy to treat cystic fibrosis by delivering genes into the cell linings of patients' airways. And it occurred to him that many fast-spreading diseases, such as influenza and SARS, can also attack those very same cells. Oh. So in 2013, Dr. Wilson and his colleagues reported that viruses carrying antibody genes in airway cells can enable mice and ferrets to fight off a wide range of flu strains. And here we go. This is where the birth of Blue Angel 2 came in. Since then, he and his colleagues have tested IgT against other viruses, causing deadly outbreaks, including, ding, 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 Ebola. It's just incredible how all this stuff that's been rolled out over the last decade and all these quote-unquote pandemics we've had and all these false starts are now all finding cures in this one treatment of genetically modifying humans. Dr. Wilson and his colleagues teamed up with who? Oh, that good old MAP Biopharmaceuticals. And they were the ones that came up with that first Ebola human trial. MAP Biopharmaceuticals, a company that developed an antibody against Ebola called ZMAP. The scientists synthesized a gene for ZMAP and have delivered this gene into mouse muscles. And the experiments are only in the early stages, but we have encouraging data, he says. Last February, Dr. Johnson then began the first clinical trial of IgT in humans. His team had placed HIV antibody genes into the muscles of volunteers to see if the treatment is safe. Oh my God, step right up. And the researchers expect to finish gathering the results by this spring. We are very optimistic and we are hopeful. Dr. Baltimore is collaborating with, of course, the National Institute of Health to start similar trials of IgT-engineered viruses against HIV, and Dr. Wilson is preparing to test IgT against the flu later this year. There is no guarantee that the successes in animal trials can be replicated in humans, because humans just aren't as big as mice, so don't worry about it. But we're hoping so. Human immune systems may attack the artificial antibodies or the viruses delivering them, destroying their protection. Or the muscle cells might make too many antibodies because they don't have a built-in regulation immune cells do. Dr. Farzan and other researchers are investigating molecular switches that can turn off productions of antibodies or just adjust their dose. Yeah, and eventually it'll be from a joystick remotely. And if we really want to see this blossom, we need regulatory off switches, he says. Yes, we just inject them and then we can push a button and turn them off. Despite lingering concerns, Dr. Nabel says that he remains optimistic. There are safety concerns that need to be addressed, but hey, there are logical ways to approach them, so don't worry about it, Johnny. And now we can test it on millions of people. As part of this 21st Century Cures Act, anyone who is desperate enough is going to step right up and can get these potentially life-saving cures. Bioethicists, I think that's what my new title's going to be, bioethicists, do not see major hurdles, ethical hurdles for IgT, because it is based on gene therapy, which has been in development for more than 30 years. Oh, yes. Really? Wonder who's paying those bioethicists. Because you know what? For these gene therapies that have been going on for more than 30 years, big surprise to me, I'd like to see the 30 years of experimentation as to where there were unwitting participants in this. I don't think they've been doing mega gene therapy for 30 freaking years, knowing which switches. We are just learning this stuff now. But he says, don't worry about it. It doesn't strike me as a radical departure. Still, Dr. Baltimore says that he envisions that some people might be a little leery of a vaccination strategy that means altering their own DNA. Oh, DNA, shmeana. Even if it prevents a potentially fatal disease. So there we go. We just targeted those resistant consumers. There might be some people that are leery of a vaccine that alters their own DNA, even if it would cure them. Those are the people that need to get their brain zapped. But my feeling, he says, as a basic scientist, is that it is our responsibility to take things into the clinic that we feel will make a difference. And now that we have the 21st Century Cures Act out there, that is going to allow this stuff into everybody's doctor's office. Well, hey, You don't need to know what's in it, Johnny. We're just going to fix you. And last but not least, and this was at least one bright point for the day, we have Robert Kennedy Jr. I don't know if you guys saw this, but Robert Kennedy Jr. stepped to the forefront in New York State here last summer, I believe, when they were pushing that meningitis vaccine is mandatory for all school children in 7th and 12th grade here in New York. And Kennedy went up in front of Albany, our local Albany government, and argued that the meningitis vaccine, statistically speaking, causes more injuries to children than cases of meningitis that we ever get in New York State. And there was also a question as to whether or not the lawmaker who was sponsoring this bill to push this meningitis vaccine, of course, to keep all of our children safe, wasn't getting some sort of kickback or wasn't involved somehow with the company who was producing that vaccine that he would somehow be benefiting from on the back end. Vaccine critic, and this is out of Scientific American, if you can even believe it, Kennedy set to chair Trump panel on vaccination safety. So Trump has appointed him on a panel of vaccination safety, and I got to say good on you there. The president-elect, just like Robert Kennedy Jr., has pushed arguments of a link to potential autism from vaccines, and I think it's going to be much bigger than that. When you look at this IGT technology, the offer came Wednesday in a meeting between Trump and the scion of America's most prominent Democratic family, Robert Kennedy Jr., but it is likely to concern scientists and public health experts who fear the incoming administration could give legitimacy to the skeptics of immunization, despite huge bodies of scientific research. Of course, scientific research the FDA allowed to get published in the journals that potentially could be incorrect or non-redacted. Remember, they're pushing an agenda, and they are leaving stuff out there so you don't know what's true or what's not, demonstrating that vaccines are safe. All right, guys. Well, tomorrow we'll pick up here. Make sure you stick around. It is Wednesday. Lonnie Clark is live on Facebook.